Size Content Marketing Show, bringing you training, insights, and tools to help turn your size company into a real user magnet with targeted content strategies. Hey everyone, welcome to the episode number 13 of the Size Content Marketing Show, the podcast for size founders, CEOs, and marketers who want to start using content to attract more users. My name is Pavel Grabowski. I'm the founder of usermagnet.io, a content marketing agency for B2B size companies, and twice a month I'm interviewing size founders and marketers about unique content strategies they're using to grow their businesses. Now, I'm sure you know this already. Podcasting is a hugely successful content strategy for building your authority and attracting new users. And if you're wondering how to actually start a podcast, what show format would be the best for your audience, and what skills you actually need to learn, then you'll love this episode. Today, I'm talking to Andy Baldacci. Andy runs two of my favorite shows, The Agency Advantage and The Early Stage Founder. And he's literally one of the top experts in when it comes to launching and building thriving podcast shows. In fact, I've actually used a lot of Andy's advice when launching this show. And to be honest, even now, every time we speak or exchange emails, I still learn a ton from him. So in our talk, we discuss the benefits of using of launching podcasts to and using podcasting to grow your audience. And we go through all the steps involved in getting a show off the ground. And at the end, Andy shares an incredible resource he's built for those of you guys who seriously consider launching own show and own, you know, your own show. So listen until the end of the episode to find out how to get it. And as always, you can find detailed show notes for this episode on our site at usermagnet.io/episode13, and that's a digit 13. And so, without any further ado, here's the interview. Hey Andy, great to have you with us. How's things, man?
Things are going well, Pavel. I'm excited. I've conducted many interviews for podcasts, but I've never actually been on the other side of the microphone. So I'm a little nervous, but I think we'll be okay.
All right. Oh, is this really your first time on the other end? It's actually crazy. It actually shows, and I told you before we hit record, I'm going to mention this, but it was so funny. This is for the listeners. Andy actually took over the show today before it even began. So I actually woke up this morning to an email from Andy saying, okay, so, you know, Pavel, we're talking today, so here's what we're going to talk about. And he actually sent me an outline for my podcast. So I'm like,
I was a little more delicate about that. I said, this is what I would like to cover. But I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking like, oh man, like this is my first interview. I better make sure I have everything prepared. So I'm like, I need to have some structure. So I wanted to lend that structure to you to see if it was okay.
But here's the funny thing. Couple of weeks ago, I was on your show, and that was my very first time on the other side of the mic, and I felt the same way. I was actually, even after the show, after we did the recording, I actually started laughing because I noticed I had my notebook that I normally use to take down notes during the you know, when I record podcasts, so I can reference and ask questions, etc. I actually had it out there, and like you know, note, and it's like, but that wasn't me. I was on the other side. So I just took notes of my own words, you know, but that's just the force of a habit, you know, being on the other side. So cool. Okay. So you now have the same experience as I had. Cool. So listen, let's dive in. We're going to chat about actually podcasting, about content channel we're both very passionate about. And you run two shows, The Agency Advantage and then your new show, The Early Stage Founder. So before we begin and before we, you know, we start discussing actually podcasting benefits of podcasting, etc., can you tell us more about yourself? Give us the story of Andy, so to speak, and also tell us how you actually got started with podcasting. What made you choose, you know, this content channel?
Yeah, so the story of Andy might take a bit of time. So what we'll do is we'll just dive into the podcasting aspect and how that all came about. And so with podcasting, I first got into it back in 2015. I joined Hubstaff as the marketing director in August of 2015. And so Hubstaff has time tracking software for remote teams. And our customers, when I came in, I was looking into who uses our product. And I saw we have the two main audience we have are startups and agencies, both of who often use remote teams to help deliver work or whatever it is. Yeah. And we had no issue creating content for startups, because our founders have been in startups for a while. This was one of our founders, this third startup. So we had plenty of knowledge here. We could write really good content that resonated for that. But for the agency side of things, we weren't experts. None of us had spent really any time in agencies. We'd done some freelancing, but that was about it. Mm-hmm. And we know that if we tried to outsource it before, but a lot of times it can be tough, especially if you're on a budget. It can be tough to get good content written by someone who's not truly an expert in the field. And I know you do a lot of content marketing and you have experience with this, but for us, we really wanted to do it in-house. Yep. And we were at a problem because we weren't experts there. And so when I was thinking about all of the options, I realized that, like, all right, if I want to create content for agency owners, I can't read a few books and start writing it, because that's mm-hmm. not going to work.
No.
What I need to do is find a way to pick the brains of other agency owners who have already been through a lot, who can share their experiences. And we thought about guest posting, but guest posting's hard because agency owners, startup founders, all these people are busy. So asking them to spend a few hours in writing a guest post, then go through the back and forth of editing all that's just mm-hmm. not really feasible. And so I thought, all right, what about a podcast? And I hadn't done one before. I had no real experience with it, but it just made sense because you don't ask for a lot from the guests. You ask for about an hour of their time, which is something, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefits for the host also are that we're able to gain authority just by interacting with these guests, because yep. with a guest post, it's on our blog, but we're not really there at all. It's not mm-hmm. really reflecting that much on us. But when we're actually communicating with the guests, we get some sort of authority by association.
Yeah.
And in the end, it ultimately created content that experts wanted to consume. And so we found out there were a lot of other benefits, but for those ones, that was what got us into it. And that was how we first launched the Agency Advantage podcast.
Awesome. So that's actually fantastic. And that mirrors my story. Gaining authority, gaining the expert status, and almost like piggybacking, mm-hmm. Through interviews. But also, like, one of the things I found with podcasting, but I actually found it later, not at the start, was that it's so easy, actually, to create content, to use podcasts as a content creation. Because, like you say, it's an hour, you record an interview, then you do some production, post-production, which you can outsource or do it yourself. And that's really it, isn't it? And the content's there, and it's working already.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And that's one of the unexpected benefits that we found, was that it's content that is really high value and mm-hmm. relatively speaking, it's not as hard to create as some other forms of content. Like we've spent hours and hours on blog posts that are mediocre, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Whereas with this content, we'll spend a similar amount of time and you get something that people actually want to consume and read. And it took us a lot of time in the beginning. Episodes took a while to put out there. Yeah. We were figuring out what can we outsource, what do we need to do ourselves, how do we do this, and we're building the systems. And after some iteration, after improving it, after constantly seeing, all right, what can we do, we got it down to where it was a much more manageable process, and we can put out a high quality podcast episode with a content upgrade, with show notes, with all of that, for less time than it takes us to write a blog post.
Yeah, absolutely. I can well imagine that. So listen, okay, that's a fantastic story, and I really want to, like, pick your brain on a lot of issues relating to podcasting. I'm still new to it, so a lot of the questions I'm going to be asking are actually my questions, actual questions I want to find answers to.
Those are the best questions.
So, but let's start with the big question, the big question. Is podcasting for everyone?
So I don't think it is. I think you need to be careful before you just dive into podcasting, because you see that as a trend and you want to capitalize on that, you want to do this. But there are two considerations I think most companies, especially SaaS companies, need to make before they make the dive. And the first one is you want to understand who your customer is. If you don't have a clear customer persona, if you're trying to appeal to multiple personas that are all over the place, it's going to be really hard to create a podcast that's going to appeal to them. You can target a single segment of that, like we did at Hubstaff. We didn't make one for startups, we made one for agencies. But you need to either have a really large segment that you're not able to touch otherwise, or you want to have the segments to be aligned. And when I say that, I don't mean you need to have everyone in the same exact field. Like, you don't need to have a doggy daycare CRM to make a podcast. Mm-hmm. But you want your customers to be facing similar problems. So for us, like digital agencies, that's a huge, very broad field. These agencies offer all kinds of different services, from web design to software development to design to advertising to whatever you can think of. But a lot of them face similar issues. And like for your podcast that I'm on right now, yes, SaaS companies are all over the place on what they do. But because they're all structured in similar ways, they have similar issues about churn, about customer acquisition, about all of these types of things.
Absolutely.
And so if you can align on a similar problem that your customers face, then it's good. So honestly, I think most startups on this first consideration probably can find something that works. If you can't find like a common customer, a common problem, then that's probably more of like a business issue you should address before mm-hmm. worrying about this. Like that's something that's really going to be central to how you run your business.
Yeah.
But so like Trello would probably be hard to launch a podcast because they literally try to create software that anybody can use for just about anything.
Yeah.
And Zapier, like they could create a startup that targets startups in general, but that's pretty broad. And the broader you go, the more competitive the space is going to be.
Yeah.
And the harder it is going to break through because you're not truly resonating with everybody. Like if I'm a SaaS founder, I'm going to much more relate to a podcast as for SaaS founders rather than startups in general. I want people who are speaking directly to me. And so the broader you go, the harder that is to do it.
Yeah,
and then exactly. The second consideration is pretty straightforward. It's really, what is your business model? If you are a B2C company, it's probably going to be tough to do. If you're B2B and don't charge that much, it's probably going to be tough to do. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the way I look at podcasting, at least, is that it's one channel that lets you build relationships and potentially partnerships, potentially make sales. It's almost like a high touch sales process. And if you need to sell to tens and hundreds of thousands of people to make your business work, then that means you're going to need a huge audience. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. But if you're a B2B company and your average revenue per user is $50 or up per month, then you don't need to have a huge audience to actually make a big difference. So I think those are the two main points. Is one, make sure you can narrow in a focus on a similar type of customer or problem. And then two, make sure that you're charging enough that you don't need to get out to millions of people to make it work.
That's actually fantastic. I actually didn't think of those two, but that makes perfect sense. Honestly, man, it makes perfect sense. But so let's take it, you know, a bit further. Let's imagine we have like a business that, you know, we have the target audience defined, and the business model is there. So mm-hmm. how would you convince someone who's got a business like that to pick up the mic, so to speak, and start producing shows? What would be the benefit you'd highlight to them?
And so honestly,
a few, but
yeah. Yeah, there's a few things to consider, because like honestly, convincing to pick up the mic, the first thing is just like psychologically coming to terms with that. Like, I'm not a natural behind the microphone. I'm not some really extroverted person. So like that was one of the biggest jumps make was like, oh man, like I signed up for this, but like what am I doing?
It was the same.
And so it took a while to get comfortable with it. And I made sure some of my first interviews, which I don't even want to listen to now, but I made sure that they were with people I was friendly with and knew, so that I'd be a little more comfortable. But the first one is just like, don't stress about that in the beginning. No one's going to be listening to your podcast anyways. So it's okay to fail. No one's going to judge you that hard. You're going to be your worst critic. But beyond that, the benefits that I like to stress to any startup founder, but especially in the SaaS world, is that there are three real benefits. The first one is that it's market research. It's everyone mm-hmm. talks about customer development and how you need to get out there. You need to be talking to your customers. But one, that takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it's really hard to get customers and especially prospects to take time out of their day to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And what the podcast gives you is basically every week I have an hour-long market research call with a prospect. I get to learn the ins and outs of their business. I get to learn what works and what doesn't. And I also get to learn like what they're struggling with. And this helps inform the rest of our marketing because now I can say, like, all right, I can either learn from this person what they're doing well, what others aren't, write some content about that. I can adjust our own sales process and say, hey, like what we think matters to them actually doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the easiest ways just to get really valuable market research. The other thing is, honestly, it's just a good way to build relationships with influencers and other people in the field. If you're trying to do that with cold email and you don't have a strong hook, like a real reason to meet with people, to talk to people, you're not going to get great results and it's going to be a numbers game. But with cold email, trying to get people on the podcast to talk to them, I found that it's the opposite of numbers game. Like I get about 90% of people who I email for an interview request, about 90% of people reply.
Mm-hmm.
And of those, about 90% of people actually show up and do an interview with me. And like those numbers would be unheard of in traditional cold email.
Absolutely agree. It's the same thing for me. In fact, it's actually funny for me, for this show, I actually had one person who said no so far. And I have like interviews lined up for until the end of April. And only one person said no. And the reason was like, I'm not comfortable in front of a mic. I just don't want to do it because like this, the thing you said, you know, there is a psychological barrier to, mm-hmm. to do it. And so out of everyone who agreed so far, only one person didn't show up and you know, so yeah, absolutely.
Right.
It's complete opposite of the typical outreach where you send 100 emails and you maybe get one reply, you know. Here you send 100 emails and you get 99 replies. And most
exactly.
of them are yes, because, you know, if your show is relevant to them or your audience is relevant to those people, like, you know, there is actually no selling involved. Like, you don't have to sell it. You just,
yep.
you know, it's an easy sell. It's like, yes, let's do it. And that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And this is actually something where it's like, it gives you access to people you otherwise wouldn't be able to talk
exactly.
to. Like, I'm talking to people who are on stage at major conferences speaking about these topics who get hundreds of emails a day and they're actually responding to me, taking time out of the day to talk to me. It's like that alone is invaluable. And like you also said, you're not pitching them. And so because of this, you're actually really building a personal connection with these people.
Mm-hmm.
You're not trying to sell them. You're just talking to them and learning about them and they're going to see how you think. And so it really does build strong relationships that aren't about sales. And these can later on turn into multiple opportunities. Like you can do cross promotions, guest posts. They even can lead to sales, but all these are possible because you're not going in there trying to make the sale right away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
agree.
The last benefit that I think is the biggest one in my opinion is just how you can use it to fuel your content marketing, because you know this, when you work with startups, the reason why so many of them don't have an active blog, don't really do content marketing is because they don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so podcasting kills like a flock of birds with one stone, because right away you get audio content. You're probably going to do show notes, so you have blog content. And for if you just want to pay someone to do it, you can get a transcript, which can act as a content upgrade. So right there are three different ways of putting content out with one interview. But
yeah, you can also do YouTube, you know, put the audio.
Exactly.
YouTube. So it's like, you know, it's actually the opportunities are almost endless. Like,
yeah, the repurposing that you can do with a blog post, it's crazy. And no one's even going that far with it in terms of podcasts. Like, this is what I'm trying to do myself, but it's just there's so many options. Like, you can just have a standalone blog post of 1,500, 2,000 words that really goes into detail on the subject of an interview. You can do infographics. But where I think there's a lot of power is like combining the lessons from multiple different interviews into kind of like an ultimate resource. So like I've done big guides, we've done webinars on like from the agency podcast, there's one where it was like the 3-step sales system for digital agencies. And it was from 3 different guests. And so we were able to synthesize this big takeaway and it did really well. And if you look at like Tim Ferriss's podcast, his most recent New York Times bestselling book is basically repurposing interviews from his podcast, the tools to tie his book. That's what it is. And it is because of these interviews that you do. So if you're struggling to find time to create content, let alone repurpose content, this is one way that you can really get a shortcut to that process.
Absolutely. Listen, if I can add one benefit I personally found, is that you also kind of show personality to your audience, because which is very difficult with writing. And look, we're a content agency. We write stuff, and we know how difficult it is to you know, kind of blend or ingrain your personality into a blog post or an ebook. You know, it's more about information there. Whereas I found podcasts to be more about you. Even though you don't talk about yourself, you're interviewing someone and they talk about themselves. It's also like, you know, how you talk, what you say, you know, how you ask questions. That builds that connection, you know, and make, I don't know how to explain it, makes an impression or something.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's especially in the SaaS marketplace where it is getting more and more competitive every single day because of how many tools there are that make launching a SaaS company easier. You need a way to differentiate yourself. And if everyone else is just putting out generic content that doesn't have any personality, that doesn't build a connection with their audience, having a podcast is a great way to do it because they can actually hear you.
Exactly.
When there are so many times when people reach out or they'll go on a webinar where I'm talking about Hubstaff or anything like that, and they're like, I feel like I already know you because I've been listening to your podcast for months. And that gives you a huge leg up over the competition because people nowadays, they have a lot of choices. And if they have a choice, they don't want to just buy from a faceless corporation.
Exactly.
They want to buy from a corporation that has people in it that they like.
Exactly. I find the same thing. Like, you know, I have calls with new potential clients and they reference the podcast and they say, no, you know, exactly the same thing. I feel like I've known you for so and so long, you know, because I've been listening to your show. And, you know, so, that's to me, that's also a huge benefit, you know. That's fantastic. So let's talk about launching a podcast.
Okay.
You know, can you like walk us through the process of launching a show? Like, you know, where would you typically begin?
So for sure. So I think there's a couple ways to look at it. And honestly, there's a ton of guys out there that will walk through step by step. This is what you need to do first, then second, then third, and get all the tech in place, get all the equipment in place. Yeah. So what I'll do at the end of the show is I'll give a resource that will link to a lot of those things because you're probably not listening right now, jotting down 1,000 notes on like, oh, I need to do this, this, and that. So I'll make sure that people have that information at the end.
Fantastic.
But the first thing I think at a high level is just get mentally prepared. It's like we were talking about before, understand that you're going to be doing something that's probably a little uncomfortable for you, but that it's okay. And from there, once you've come to terms like, all right, I'm going to be putting myself out there, I'm going to be talking behind the mic, I'm going to be out there on the internet. Once you've come to terms with that, then it's just getting the tools and technology in place. And honestly, for the first podcast, we made this way harder than we needed to because we wanted to do everything ourselves. We didn't want to use the all-in-one tools, but like looking back on it, we should have just signed up for like Blueberry or Libsyn or any of those other options that just handle it all for you.
Yeah.
So again, I'll make sure to get links to these options out there, but the big takeaway from that is don't try to do everything yourself. From there, once you have the foundation in place, then honestly, it's just getting your processes in place. And this, there is a lot of work. You have to schedule your interviews if it's an interview show. You have to prepare for the interviews. You have to conduct the interviews. You have to edit the interviews, do the show notes, and do all of that. And like that was a lot of work in the beginning. It seemed worth it because we were getting good feedback. What we did in the early days is we outsourced the editing from day one. I'm not an audio engineer. I have no clue how to do that. I've since learned how to like chop up episodes a little bit and make very basic edits, but I still always hand it over to an editor and let them just deal with it. But everything else I was doing, and it was a lot of work. And the big thing is when you get started, you want to have an idea of how you're going to get the episode out there, how people are actually going to find this. And one of the benefits of doing an interview-based show is that you can leverage the network, the audience of your guests. A lot of times, almost every time, they're going to want to share the episode because they're proud of it. They want to hear people. They want people to hear them and think like, oh, this guy or this gal, they're an authority. They're an expert. They were on this podcast. So you're going to have them share it. But what we did at Hubstaff is we promoted the first four episodes to our full email list, which seeded the audience, and that really helped build things from there. And then we also would promote every future episode as like a smaller section in our newsletter. And if people would click the link in that newsletter, they would then get added to our podcast list. Mm-hmm. So that was a great way to seed things. But at a high level, that's really what it looks like. It's one, just coming to terms with wanting to do a podcast. Two, yep. Getting the tech in place and not trying to do everything yourself, to roll your own solutions. And as SaaS founders, I know a lot of you are technical. Don't try to build this yourself. There are solutions out there that are like $15 a month that will just handle most of it for you. Just do that. Then it's getting your processes in place, promoting it, and from there is refining your processes. Because like I was saying, the episodes in the beginning, I probably spent way too much time on them. I'm guessing like 10, 12, maybe more hours per episode. I would spend a ton of time researching the guests before even emailing them, and just on and on. I spent too much time doing everything. But I also dropped a lot of balls, because if you don't have systems in place to keep track of everything, it's really hard to remember, like, oh, I need to get this guest an outline. Like, oh, this guest still isn't scheduled, or so-and-so. So it's building these systems and improving it over time got us huge returns. And now, like, for a one-hour podcast at Agency Advantage, I can roughly do it in 4 to 5 hours. And that's being very thorough with my research. And that's doing above and beyond. If I wanted to just crank out episodes, give me an hour outside of the interview and I'd be fine.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to comment on that, because one thing that, you know, you really surprised me on the show we did in December, because you started quoting my content. There was one moment when you referenced and I was like, this guy really read this stuff. This is actually amazing, you know? I didn't actually expect such a thorough research, and it actually gave me a kick to you know, even you know, up in my game a little in terms of research. And it's true. You know, you need those processes. But if I could add something, it's like keep all this simple. Isn't that the key? Because when I started, like, my processes were probably like, you know, a mile long. It's like, it was just silly. And then you realize that, you know, you're just doing too much. You need to simplify things. You know, it's just as you say, outsource what you can and then simplify everything else. You know, so have a format for your show notes. So you don't sit there and wonder, like, okay, so what am I going to write into these in these show notes? You know, what am I going to focus on? Have a format. So you almost like a template. So you almost just fill in the blanks almost, you know?
Yeah. And so that was what we did when we were trying to streamline things is that by getting time savings and all of the complex things I was adding into the process, by removing them, by outsourcing them, I was able to spend more time researching. And so, we outsourced the editing. I also have templates for basically how I contact people. I'll personalize. I'll make sure to do some research before to personalize these templates. But I use templates for basically every email that I send. I'll send one inviting them on the show. I'll send one giving a general overview of the topics I'm going to cover. Reminder emails, follow up emails, all of that are template based. We track everything in Trello. So like. What I do every morning is I'll just open up the Trello for my two podcasts and be like, all right, these people need to be contacted. Once it's done, I'll move them to the next little column. The biggest thing, honestly, that saved us time was the transcription process. I used to, for the show notes, I would listen to the episode again afterwards, take notes, write down things that the editor needed to pay attention to, and that took a lot of time. That probably took, for an hour show, that alone probably took 2 to 3 hours to do. What we did by handing it over to a transcriptionist is, one, we now have a transcription which we can use as a content upgrade. But two, I can then just quickly skim it over, get the gist of it, and pull out different parts that are valuable, hand those to an editor, have them clean up the text, and there, the show notes are done. So that was huge. Getting a transcriptionist and getting an editor to turn those into show notes was very helpful for us.
Yeah, I totally agree. I solved it slightly differently. I'm actually taking notes right now So this is, but that's just a natural way I do. Like whenever I have a call with somebody, you know, either a client, a prospect, or you know, whatever, I would have a piece of paper in front of me and I would be jotting notes so I can reference them. And I found that this, for me, that works best because, like you, I would originally, I would, you know, after the call, I would sit back and re-listen to the interview, take notes, and I was just taking, man, so like, you know, so much time because you stop, you rewind, you know, listen to something again, you know, then it's just take, you know, it was just taking too long.
And I mean, it's just finding systems that work for you. Yeah. And like, even now, I'm sure the notes you take now are probably different than when you first started because you realize like, oh, I need to note these things. I need to, these are the types of things I need to make sure to remember. I need to pay attention to whatever. Yeah. And so it's like,
I have even I have a box where I put in all the resources you mentioned. So I don't have to go through my show notes to like, what resources did we talk about? You know, no, I just have a little box and I type in like Trello, etc. You know, it, it just goes in there straight away. It's very organized, but you develop this, you know, as
exactly.
It's the same thing. I think with the format, with the, like the way you conduct interview, like you said yourself, like you can't listen to your first shows and it's the same thing for me. I don't even go near the episode number one, even though it was a great episode. I know it was, but I just don't want to go near it, you know?
Yeah, one of our most listened to episodes was like the third episode and like my audio was bad. and I'm just like, why do people keep listening to this? I'm like, it's like the second most popular episode was our third episode. And then like no other earlier ones were as popular as later ones. But it's like, for whatever reason, that one resonated. So it's like a lot of times people will be able to look past those types of flaws as long as the content is good. And so I think it all goes back to what you're saying is keep it simple. Make sure you're not dropping any balls, but just get the basics in place so that you know where the moving pieces are. You know what you need to pay attention to, but don't try to make it perfect before you launch. Just get something out there and you'll improve it over time and make it better, but you just want something simple in place to make sure you actually get the first episode out.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing I believe in when it comes to like, you know, errors, mistakes in first episodes or even later, or your kind of, you know, shortcomings, some small bits and things you don't do right, I think they're actually okay. I think they show almost like the human side,
right?
Because like last week I published an episode and I was just about to record the introduction, like, you know, and like not just about, but on the day when I was about to record the introduction, I actually caught cold and I lost my voice.
I heard that one.
Oh, did you hear that? And you know, and I had the, you know, the there was a decision. I'm not publishing on time, you know, and here's the thing, that the way I look at podcasting is you make a promise, you know, and every exactly. show opening I say, you know, twice a month or whatever, on every second Tuesday of the month, whichever way I say it, I don't remember right now, but you know, I say I make this promise, right? I'm gonna publish a show. So here was a dilemma. Okay, I'm gonna wait a couple of days until my voice comes back, or I'm gonna just publish it as it is. And then I decided, no, I'm just, you know, stick to the my schedule, publish it. But I'm just gonna, you know, not gonna make a big deal about it. I'm just gonna open and say, hey guys, I'm sorry, like, you know, my voice gave out, and I'm gonna, and it's not gonna sound well. But the good news is, when we were recording the interview, my voice was fine, so you're not gonna have to listen to this screeching sound for too long.
But it goes back to the building a personal connection with the listener, and it's what people are craving these days. Is they're tired of the canned corporate messaging and they want some authenticity, and having a podcast gives you a platform to do that.
Exactly. So the thing is, that's the key thing. Just don't overstress and don't about being perfect or making mistakes, or, you know, or not being perfect, I mean, and making mistakes. They're actually fine, you know. This there's nothing wrong with it. It just shows you, not some, you know, robot machine perfect, you know, talking. So I think, you know, that's another big thing. So listen, We covered the, you know, the process of launching a podcast, but this is one thing, the format. There are actually a couple of formats you could choose. Like, this is an interview. This show, you know, both you and I, we run interview based shows, but they're different types. So could you actually tell us more about them and maybe like highlight the pros and cons of each?
Yeah, so To be honest, the format I'm most familiar with and most comfortable with is the interview format. And I think that's great for when you're trying to reach an audience where you're not quite an expert yet. Through the process, like through doing the interviews, you're going to gain some expertise. But in the beginning, if you're not an expert, an interview show makes the most sense. The alternative is more of like a monologue show. And that's where you'll have, like, if you listen to Drift's podcast, it's usually Dave and the CEO, David, of Drift doing it. And while they're sometimes it's Dave interviewing the CEO, but it's still just them. They're not bringing in guests often. They're not doing that. And it's because they have real domain expertise. And if you already truly are an expert in your field, this is a great format to do. And there's many ways to do it. Some of people are going to have much more thorough notes and production, and they're going to plan out these big presentations, and they can take a lot of time. But alternatively, the way for Drift's podcast, what they do is David Cancel, the CEO, is just very well educated in this field. So David Gearhart, their marketing director, can just ask him questions off the cuff, and he's going to be able to fill a podcast with that. So David, the host, is going to do some prep and give him a heads up, obviously, but most of the work will be on his side. You also have Startup Chat by Steli, FD, and Heaton Shaw. They can just shoot the shit for half an hour, for an hour, about any topic. And so for them, these formats are very easy. If you're struggling with time and you're not someone who's comfortable just going off the cuff about multiple different topics in your field, then an interview show is probably not the best format. And then obviously outside of this, you have the storytelling podcast. You have all the different types of podcasts in the more consumer world. But in the B2B space, in the typical SaaS space, I usually see either interview shows or kind of the monologue discussion shows. Are there any formats you think I'm missing?
Well, there is one. I was considering initially, because the format is actually choosing a format, at least for me, was a big decision, because as you say, you can do a monologue and you can have someone else do it for you, like a co-host, where you just chat. So it's not an interview, but it's between a monologue and interview. You know, you bounce ideas off each other, almost like we do now, but on regular basis with the same two people. Then there is the actual monologue where you're just on your own and you talk, you teach, and at least that's how I approach it. Okay, it's like more like teaching, it's like lecturing, and I just couldn't, like, I wasn't comfortable doing it. I tried, I recorded a couple of like test trial episodes, and I just felt no, that's just not for me. There's another one I was considering at the very beginning, and it's like there are companies who basically record audio versions of their posts and publish it as, so like Copyblogger does it, maybe not Baremetrics anymore, but
does that as
Baremetrics,
well.
I actually wrote them here then, like Baremetrics, and they do it quite well actually. They're, you know, I think every post they publish, they actually they have an audio version. I think Convince and Convert do it, or used to do it as well, and they were like, their show is really well produced, so it's not like, you know, you hit play and there's just some guy reading a content. You know, it's actually had a proper intro and you know, it was broken into sections, but it actually was their blog post, just the audio version of their blog post. So I think that's another, you know, format. Now, I tried it as well, just for myself when I was picking the format, and I just couldn't make myself to sound human when I was reading the content. Do you know what I mean? Like, now I'm sometimes like, while we talk now, I'm, you know, I have to stop and think of, you know, how to say something. So there's probably a lot of, you know, but that's how we talk normally.
Right. It's a natural conversation.
There's natural conversation. Whereas when I was recording myself reading, it was just like very robotic. So I found it's not for me. But I'm not saying it's wrong, but that's just one format I was also considering, because it on the outset, it feels super easy. You have the content. You know what to say. There is no surprise. That's the problem with an interview, when you're talking to somebody and you're bouncing ideas. And, you know, you need to get into the zone of the conversation. You need to be fully tuned in, because there might be something unexpected. Like, you know, you may hear something and that will take the interview into a completely different direction.
Right.
You know, so, and that's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, you have your questions prepared, but, you know, because you're having a conversation, your guest may say something, that you're just going to pick up on and start going into that direction. And that's it. Your questions are gone, you know, it's hard to go back there. So that's another, you know, challenge. So yeah, so these are the three that I tested was the monologue, as you mentioned, reading content, reading just blog posts, and interview. So and obviously I settled for the interview, which is actually I think it seems the hardest, but it actually becomes it's once you get into the hang of it, it right. becomes the easiest.
Right. Once you're comfortable with the format, and for me it's like I think a lot of it comes down to like what you're just generally comfortable with as a person, what your mm-hmm. personality is. And it's like if writing content comes really easily to you, mm-hmm. then maybe it makes sense to start with written content and then use that to inspire or even just script a podcast. Yeah. But for me, it's like I'm kind of a naturally inquisitive, curious person, so I ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And so the interview format, I was originally concerned about. I'm like, oh, like what if I can't come up with questions to fill the time?
Exactly, yeah.
But like as I got into it, I was like, oh, no, like if I – while I might like go through my kind of standard questions quickly – if I run out of questions to ask, I'll just ask about something I'm curious about. Like you threw in a few questions where like, I just want to know this. And like, I think yeah. that's what makes a good interview driven podcast is someone who's just curious in general
yeah.
and can ask questions.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm sure this is the same thing with you. Like your probably most popular shows are the ones where you've actually, you've been drilling the subject, you know, going deeper and deeper into the subject, and it just makes it so interesting. Cool. So we have like, you know, we covered the three kind of formats, the reading content, monologue, interviews, you know, there's pros and cons of each one of every one of them. And mm-hmm. so it's a really a question of, you know, testing what you're
right.
most comfortable doing. Right. And as I said, from personal experience, like my advice, try all of them. Literally, so record podcasts for yourself. Like, you know, I still have them on my hard drive, like my reading the content or me talking, and I'm never going to show it to anyone. But, you know, once you try, you do one or two takes, you very mm-hmm. quickly realize, okay, I don't think I'm just going
to... That didn't feel right.
No, I'm not going to... This is not going to work for me. So, yeah, that's the thing. But listen, there is a... And here's a question that's... I have it actually in bold here. And, you know, this is something I'm super interested in. And there isn't much information about it out there. But I'm sure, like, you know, this a lot of people listening and who consider starting a podcast might also be interested in how do you measure the success of your podcast? I mean... You know, from what I know, iTunes offers no analytics data. At least I haven't right. found anything there. Right? You get some stats from your hosting provider. Like, I use SoundCloud, so they show me, like, you know, I'm on a paid plan, so they show me some statistics, but it's very limited, again. And if you use, like, FeedBurner for your feed, they get to give you some numbers, but it's hard to compare that to like the wealth of data we have in Google Analytics, for example, when it comes to websites, right? So yeah. How do you monitor and measure your progress, like for your two
shows? I mean, the reason why there's not a lot out there on this is because there really isn't a great solution. There's not a good answer to this. So people okay. just kind of hand wave over this and just don't want to talk about it. But I'm happy to talk about it because I think it's something that's important for people to know, especially technical marketers who seem to make up a lot of the SaaS industry, is that people, they want their numbers. That's what mm-hmm. it draws them to SaaS, is because at the end of the day, the business works or it doesn't because of the numbers. And so with podcasting, it's really hard to get numbers because the way it all works, it's all powered by RSS feeds. There's mm-hmm. no like more in-depth thing than that. It's just everything is powered by an RSS feed. So you can get like downloads. Mm-hmm. I know Craig Hewitt from Podcast Motor is working on like potentially putting out a product that like lets you know how long they listen to if you listen to it like in the player, but if you listen to it in iTunes, they can't tell.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's like you can get like the geography, like I guess like the IP address of people who downloaded. Mm-hmm. But that's really about it. And so at Hubstaff, what we did is we have tracking. We use Woopra to track everything. We just kind of feed in all of our data, and that lets us play around with it, make reports, this and that. It's like we can track who visited the show notes page, like who read the show notes, and if they then became a customer, if they already were a customer, things like that. But most people listen to the podcast in iTunes or in Stitcher and or in whatever their podcast app is, and we can't tie that back directly into our metrics. And so what we do, the reason why we were optimistic about the podcast, why we doubled down and kept going with it, is because we saw our audience growing, and obviously that's a bit of a vanity metric, but when you don't have many more metrics than that, it's you got to go with what you have. But additionally, we would get people who would be writing into support who would mention the podcast. We would just hear it more and more from new customers that they heard us on the podcast, or when I'd be hosting webinars, they'd say, hey Andy, like I found out because of the podcast. So that's not like a quantifiable thing, but when you hear it that frequently, you know there's a lot of other people that aren't saying it but came from the same source. But some people still will think that's not enough, I want better numbers. And while there's not better direct numbers you can get, there are ways that you can do more and try to sort of build out a funnel that is trackable. And so you can do that by having special offers in the podcast that drive people to your website, to a specific landing page, to a webinar, that sort of thing. And then you can see, like, all right, how many people are showing up to these events? How many people are signing up for this offer? How many people are doing this action? And then see, based just on this data, is it worth it to continue? And we honestly haven't experimented with this as much as we should, because a lot of it, even up to this point, has just been getting our systems in place to make producing the podcast easy. But going forward, that's going to be a big place of effort for us, is finding ways to really complete the funnel by getting people from the podcast onto some other thing that we actually can track.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. And look, I'm struggling with the same issues. You know, it's that there is no data. We're so used to the data we have, and when it comes to podcasting, there's nothing, you know, almost nothing. But I agree with the funnel. I haven't like implemented proper funnels yet, but even the small funnels, if you can do that, like for instance, use some sort of like a plugin like PrettyLink for WordPress, that, you know, allows you to create simple links, very, very memorable and short links for your show notes. Like, for instance, for me, the actual podcast URL format is podcast dash and the person's name and surname. So that's the slug in the URL. But the actual show notes, when I record the introduction, etc., are like, you know, usermagnet.io/episode5 with the digit 5. So it's very easy to you know, remember episode 5. That's it. But the beauty of, like, for instance, for me, PrettyLink is that it actually has analytics. It can show you how many people clicked on it and how many unique clicks you got for that URL. So, yeah, again, you can measure if, like, you know, people or listeners actually went in and checked the, what's it called, the show notes, right? And I know, again, as you said, it's not ideal metric, but since we have not much else, you know, you have to make what you have. So that was kind of my kind of, you know, the workaround I found, and you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, you guys built something similar.
Maybe yeah, and I think and at the end of the day, though, it's if you can get the process down where it's not taking a ton of time, it's a much easier question to answer. Like, is this showing an ROI? And say we're producing a podcast episode for less than $500 an episode, like including my time, including the editors, including all of that. If we're at that point, how many customers does each episode need to drive for this to be profitable? In a SaaS business with a reasonable lifetime value of a customer, so they have a decent average revenue per user per month and low churn, it's not going to be that many. Like, probably one customer per episode will show an ROI. And so it comes down to how detailed you need to get. And if you start investing more resources, you want to have a better picture. But at the end of the day, just on the pure ROI of customers, it's usually not a big hurdle to clear. And that's not even considering the value of the relationships that you're building in all of that as well.
Exactly. I totally agree. Yeah, listen. So, as a last thing, because we're talking about launching a podcast, and getting the various benefits from it, from mm-hmm. podcasting. Can you highlight like 3 to 5 things that people typically mistakes people can make when launching a podcast? Now I know what I did wrong when I launched. I can talk about it later, but this is but I want to first hear from you. What do you think are the three to five biggest mistakes?
Yeah. So the first one, in my opinion, is it's the same with any content marketing. If you don't have a focus, if you don't have a real strategy before you get started, it's probably not going to work out. Mm-hmm. You want to generally know who you're speaking to as an audience and what they care about. If you can't do that, that's a huge mistake, and it's probably going to be really hard for you to get any traction at all. Mm-hmm. And so on that, another issue that a lot of podcasts face is that they focus on what they do rather than solving their customer's problem. This, you see this in blog content too. It's like, say you are a SaaS company that does content marketing efforts. Like if you just write all about content marketing, okay, that's probably partially what they care about, and that will be helpful to people who know they have a content marketing need or problem mm-hmm. or whatever. But people don't usually just want content marketing for content marketing's sake. They want it because it's going to help them solve a deeper problem. Mm-hmm. And so if you can speak to those deeper problems, that's when you're really going to resonate. So focus less on what you do and more on what your customers care about and what they're ultimately trying to do for mm-hmm. their business. Mm-hmm. The second thing is an easier one. It's just not being consistent. Yeah. People, while it's not a huge investment to listen to podcasts, if there's so many out there, I'm not going to start listening to a podcast if I don't trust that you're actually going to be putting out content regularly. Mm-hmm. I want to see that you can follow a schedule and stick to it. So by not putting out content when you say you're going to and not having a consistent schedule, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot and you're probably going to lose some listeners. So just if you set a schedule, make sure you stick to it. Mm-hmm. The third one is just not maximizing the content. I'm a victim of this as well. I don't fully maximize the content I get. And that's what I talked to you before about is building systems to make sure I'm squeezing every last drop mm-hmm. of value out of the podcast that I can. And I do a decent job of it by getting the transcripts, by generating other blog posts from that content. But there's still a lot more you can do. Mm-hmm. And for how much of a time crunch startup founders are in, mm-hmm. they really want to make sure they're getting the full value from the podcast by repurposing it as many places as they can. And the last one, in my opinion, is just trying to do everything yourself. It's easy to want to micromanage, especially when you're putting your voice out there. You want to make sure everything is exactly the way you want it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, that a lot of the tasks that are required for putting the podcast out there aren't high value. If you can pay someone $50 to edit the podcast for you and save you an hour or two of your own time as a startup founder, as a SaaS founder, that's worth it.
That's no-brainer.
Just do it. Just don't try to make it perfect like you were saying before. Just try to get it done and good enough and outsource as much as you can, because the more you try to take on, the less likely you're going to be consistent, the less likely you're going to do it, the less likely you're even going to get started. So try to be hands-off and let other people handle those tasks so you can do what you do best.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I wanted to talk about. Don't overcomplicate these things, especially technology. It's so easy to get bogged down into, the types of microphones, the software for editing, etc. But ultimately, a lot of this stuff, someone else can do a lot of this stuff for you. So you don't really have to worry about, audio editing software. Now, I edit my show myself, but that's because I have experience with some audio editing, not on a professional level, but it's enough, as you say. It's good enough. I can get the podcast out, and I can do it quickly. But, for someone who hasn't never recorded audio and produced audio and used multi-track software, whatever, you know, to edit. It's challenging.
If you run a SaaS company,
yeah,
it is not worth your time to buy a book to learn how to use GarageBand or Audacity or any of these programs and spend hours and hours and hours to put out a mediocre result. Just let someone else do it.
Exactly. Just don't complicate it. Focus on the show. And that's the problem. That's the mistake I made. Like, I overcomplicated everything, you know, especially on the technology side of things initially, which is so easy because, like, you know, everywhere you go, people talk about, you know, oh, it has to be, you know, that type of microphone. Just get an average microphone. It will do initially, you know. I totally agree with that. So listen, Andy, that was actually a fantastic chat. Thanks so much for your insights and for coming on the show. Before we finish this, can you tell our listeners where they could find out more about you, and of course share that link to the resource you mentioned earlier on?
Yeah, so early in the podcast, I'd mentioned that a lot of this has been covered. And while we could spend our time talking about equipment, about services, all that, that ultimately doesn't matter. And that's why I'm glad we were able to focus on the big picture. But if you are trying to launch a podcast, those things, you at least need to know where to start. Yes. So what I did is I put together a resource that covers pretty much everything. It covers a checklist for getting your podcast into iTunes, into Stitcher, into those directories. It gives you a list of equipment that will get you started, the software to use, email templates to reach out to guests if you want to do an interview show, a Trello board for tracking, whatever you need to get started with your podcast so you can stop making excuses and just get something out there. It's there. So what it is, I set up a website for this. It's www.podcastmanual.com. All these resources are there for free. And as an added bonus for your listeners, what I'll do is I'll offer a free 30-minute call with me to make sure that the podcast is right for them. I'm not going to pitch them anything like that. I enjoy talking podcasting. I have a lot of experience with this. So if you're on the fence and want to save a lot of time and just, is this even worth it for me? Go to that website. You can book a link on my Calendly to find a time to chat, and we'll see if this podcasting is a good fit for you. So that's www.podcastmanual.com.
Wow.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Andy Baldacci, and my website is andybaldacci.com. That's AndyBaldacci.
Wow, this is awesome, man. Fantastic. I wish this resource existed like last year when I was trying to figure out all this stuff, you know. Fantastic. I'm going to include all those links in the show notes as well. And Andy, thanks so much. Thanks for your insight. Thanks for your time. It was fantastic chat.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. I think for my first podcast interview, you were a great host and you made it comfortable for me. So thanks for that on my end.
Cheers, man. Thanks, Andy. Bye.
See ya.